with a high near 24 degrees. On Friday, a chance of snow showers. Maybe some rain showers in there as well. Cloudy with a high near 36. Now, keep in mind, we do have a winter storm warning in effect until about 6 p.m. tonight. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. Your news time is just about 12:30. Dave Malarkey is up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR, the snowy, wintry Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. And boy, what a mess it is out there today, huh?
Wow.
We've had to make some changes in our schedule today because of guests who were not able to make it today because of the weather. And please, we understand that, and I'm sure you do too. Some people who just can't get out and get around in this. So we will reschedule those guests. We will be talking a little bit later with Amy Metrick from Penn State Extension, getting an update on the 4-H activities around the area. And we're also going to take a second listen to some interviews. I've got a couple of interviews that are pretty interesting. Now, they previously aired here on WISR, but again, we're sticking these in to cover up from some guest cancellations that we had today. First of all, Russia has been in the news a great deal, for about the past year now, since Trump was elected president. What do you know about Joseph Stalin, the dictator, the brutal murderer, dictator of the Soviet Union? We're going to talk about his daughter. Did you know he had one? Yes, Svetlana. And she had a very troubled life. She lived in the U.S. for a while. Rosemary Sullivan has written a marvelous biography of Stalin's daughter. We had a chance to talk with her previously on the program. I'm going to take a second and listen to that. And also an interview that we did, and this is a few years back now, but it's a fascinating story. We talked with Michael Trinklein about states in the United States that almost came into being but didn't. Have you ever heard these stories? There are a number of states with goofy names, and many of them came very close to being a state, but it just didn't happen. You know, we're left with the 50 that we have now that everybody knows. Trinklein wrote about this in a book called Lost States. It's still around. I saw it. Where did I see that most recently? Ollie's, you know. But obviously available online and at bookstores as well. So we'll take a take a second listen to that later on today. It's really a fascinating story. It's kind of funny, but fascinating. But we start out with open talk here on the program today. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. How are you dealing with the storm? Hey, folks, this is not the worst storm we've ever had, okay? So let's not blow it out of proportion like some people do on TV. I mean, you'd think that every winter storm, you know, it's going to be the end of the world. It's not that, but this is a severe one, no question. The freezing rain that we were getting here in the Butler area for, I guess we had that for 2 or 3 hours. That has now changed back to snow here in the Butler area, so we're accumulating again. And it is just a mess out there. It is just a mess, even on main streets and on main highways. Now, you can't fault the road crews They've been out. It's snowing. It was snowing so hard that it was just impossible to keep ahead of it. I don't know what time you got your motor started this morning. I checked outside at about 3:30, 3:35 was the first time I looked out, and it was nothing. And I'm saying, wow. And I remember the forecast. They said sometime after 3 a.m. So I checked again about 10 minutes later. Still nothing. 3:45, nothing. So, it's time to get ready for work. And hopped in the shower, back out, looked out the window, snowing to beat the band. So all of this mess that we have only started about 4 o'clock this morning. And for about 3 hours, give or take, and these conditions varied from place to place, for about 3 hours, we were getting an inch an hour. And that is heavy, heavy snow. And in fact, the snow itself is very heavy. It's very wet. That changed over to freezing rain here in the Butler area. That was around 8 o'clock, I guess. And we started to notice the widespread changeover. Now we're back to snow. So the bottom line is winter storm warning. They had changed that by well before dawn. It wasn't just an advisory anymore. A winter storm warning until 6 o'clock tonight. And current temperatures, we're now at 29. We were up, I guess that's as high as we've been. We got close to the freezing mark, but not quite there. It's going to get bitterly cold tonight, plummeting all the way down to 11. Boy, that's going to be great tomorrow morning, isn't it? All this slush and mush is going to be frozen solid, solid as a rock. Not looking forward to that. But in case you haven't heard, the weekend forecast calls for a warm-up. Probably going to be in the low 40s Saturday and Sunday. Get out the Bermuda shorts and the tank tops, right? Let's see what the people have to say about how they're dealing with this storm and any troubles they have. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Good afternoon, Dave. Not a comment about the weather, but I was just noticing on my calendar that Monday is Abraham Lincoln's birthday, February 12th. And I just was wondering how long it'll be before his statues are being torn down in the South and over the country.
Well, I don't know. Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, of course, by John Wilkes Booth, who was a Southern conspirator, and it was because of the Civil War that he was killed. I kind of regret that we don't have a Lincoln's birthday holiday anymore. When I was a kid, I unless my memory has totally failed me, I swear to goodness we had Lincoln's birthday off from school.
Yes, and I believe George Washington's too.
Yeah, we had two of them right in a row.
Another famous person's birthday, and that is Charles Darwin. And I'll tell you, when you're bored on a snowy, cold winter day, you're stuck to the house, you start doing all kinds of research. And Charles Darwin, so many things I didn't know about him. He attended school. He was in a school of medicine and dropped out, much to his father's dismay. But then he went to a school of divinity. And after that, he became an agnostic, not an atheist, but an agnostic. Mm-hmm. And it took him 20 years before he published his theory of evolution. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So many people think, too, that he was the one who originated the phrase survival of the fittest, but it wasn't him. And I always thought it was his quote as well.
I was reading a little bit about his expedition along the coast of South America, the Galapagos Islands and so on. Believe it or not, I was waiting to get a haircut, and I picked up about a 5-year-old issue of National Geographic, and there was a lengthy article. Their articles are quite lengthy, but it was on Darwin, and I didn't.
And they don't go out of date. The National Geographic, you can pick one up 5 years later and read something. Interesting.
I did not know anything about his previous life, that he was a divinity student, but That doesn't surprise me, actually. And I had no idea that he was born on the same day as Abraham Lincoln. That's fascinating.
Well, something else that I really got a chuckle of, and it showed me his humorous side, was he made a list, pro and con, of reasons to get married or not get married. Hmm. And one of the things was, he said that having company in his old age would be, having female companionship in his old age would probably be better than his dog. And I just, when I read that, I just cracked up. I laughed out loud.
Interesting guy. Interesting guy. And how about Lincoln? I can admit, did you ever visit the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, I've been there, yes.
I haven't been there since I was
breathtaking.
Kid. I was probably 8 or 9 years old first time I was there. And I can remember thinking, that is the biggest statue I've ever seen. It's the combination of when you're inside the memorial, Lincoln is, first of all, sitting in his monstrous chair. And he was extremely tall to begin with. And I guess when you're a little kid, you look up at it and you say, oh, my gosh, that guy was a giant,
Yes, yes. Well, that was just my few observations on this snowy February day. And thank you for allowing me to share.
Thanks for sharing with us. Nice to talk with you.
Okay, bye now.
283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Of course, when I came to work, we had already had snow-covered roads. It was coming down so quickly, even all the main roads were snow-covered and very slick. And I was out a couple of hours ago to grab a bite and do a little reconnoitering. And, boy, it's just a mess. If you haven't been out today and you don't have to go out, it's not a bad idea to stay inside and heat up some chicken noodle soup or some toasted cheese sandwiches or some comfort food, because it is a mess. In the city of Butler, even the main streets are snow-covered and rutted. Intersections, if you're trying to walk, it's just a disaster. You have 6 inches of slush in some places, mush. Yeah. And, again, you can't fault the road crews. They're doing all they can do. PennDOT has 42 trucks out. I didn't realize until we had the news story this morning that PennDOT is responsible for 1,600 miles of state highway in Butler County, just within Butler County. That's a lot of territory to cover. But they're out in force, and hopefully by the time this taper's off, and it is expected to sometime later today, I'm still a little iffy on just when it's going to happen, but other than the fact that it's going to be very cold tonight and tomorrow, the crews will be able to get a handle on this thing. It starts snowing again now, and their work is kind of frustrating because they plow a street, salt a street, and the next thing you know, it's all covered again. Did you have to go out today? Did you have any trouble? We kept getting reports from As people drifted into work today, following those of us who are here, at the crack of dawn, well before daybreak, and the reports were just not good. Cars sliding, trucks sliding, people stuck along roadways, and it is not a whole lot better right now, I'll tell you. Not a whole lot better. But the only thing we have going for us is the temperature, which is not all that bad. 29 right now, so certainly not brutally cold. It will be tomorrow, but not today. These are the days, 283-2525, by the way, open talk for a while here as we start the program today, 283-2525. These are the days when you were a kid, you just loved it, right? Yeah. Although, when I was in elementary school, and even in junior high school, we did not have a whole lot of snow days. I don't think kids were any tougher back in those days, but it was very seldom that you had a complete cancellation. I attended a rather rural school district, and we had a lot of kids that came from a long ways off, and if it was bad enough that they couldn't make it in, they just didn't make it in, but school went on. But these were the days, especially when you're a little kid, you loved it. I mean, this was This was snow riding heaven, snowball heaven, snow fort heaven. I was reminiscing a little bit with my morning colleague Kate this morning on Coffee with Kate. I said, did you ever get a sled for Christmas? She said, well, we had sleds, but I said, my brother and I had matching lightning gliders. Pat Parker, did you have a sled when you were a kid? Lightning gliders we had. I don't know. I think that might have been at the time pretty much the creme de la creme of sleds. They were really nice. Really nice, long and sleek, and boy, did they go. They went like lightning. Well, that's why they called them lightning gliders. Whether they still make lightning gliders, I have no idea. My brother and I had twin sleds, and we had one of those saucer things, too. You know? Ours was red. Well, it's about, I don't know, 3 feet, 4 feet diameter, and those were fun. And, man, we rode those things until we could hardly stand up on days like this way back when. Lightning gliders. 283-2525, our number. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. When you were talking there just a minute ago, I remembered something that's a very fond and sweet memory of when my kids were little and we had snow days. I had a daycare in home, and we'd be anxiously waiting by the radio for the announcement. And there was a huge celebration when we found out school was canceled. And everybody would come and sled ride for the whole day. Yeah, so thank you for prompting that memory, and I hope everybody enjoys this snowy day.
Tell you something else we did. Well, two things. We had a pond, believe it or not, at the bottom of our street. So we were able to ice skate. Although in weather like this, you could never ice skate because you had that wet snow on top of the ice. That was like trying to push your shopping cart through the parking lot at Giant Eagle, you know, when it's snow. But the other thing we had, that's what it was like. The street that we had rather high banks on both sides. And we lived at, our house was at the top of a hill, and it was a pretty good walk down to the bottom and then on to school. But we would get these huge snow drifts, okay, along these high banks. And I can remember as a kid, just, you know, you'd get up on top of the hill and you'd run and you'd just dive into those snow banks. I mean, if there hadn't been any snow there, you'd break your neck. But it
was, goodness.
Just dive into those things and dig your way out, you know.
Yeah, I went to St. Paul's school as a grade schooler. Mm-hmm. And one day we had so much snow that I put my book bag on the sidewalk, headed down Locust Street, sat on it, and slid all the way down the hill to the school. And I was a wet, sloppy mess, and the nuns didn't know what to do with me. They thought they'd have to call my mother to bring dry clothes. But winter can be fun. So I hope everybody is safe out there. And thanks for the memories, Dave.
Thank you, too. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
We're just in from our newsroom from the Butler Transit Authority. They've now canceled all further bus service for today. Butler Transit Authority canceling all bus service for today. So, folks, you're getting an idea that, you know, we're not making this up. I mean, it's a real sloppy mess out there. A real sloppy mess. So if you don't have to go out in it, and if you do, be extremely careful. Back to the phones we go. It's Open Talk, 283-2525 is the number. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Well, Dave, you're talking about, you know, sled riding.
Yeah.
We used to get the little car would come to the second point.
You'd
off the most forge or... come out, you know, the peak in the front.
Uh-huh, yeah.
We used to get them, wax them up, get up in the hill, but we used to go to meet the van.
So you used an old car hood to sled right on, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Wow.
We get, there's no fences or anything around.
Getting
waxed up good.
Now, I've heard that there were some streets, I did not grow up in Butler, but I've heard from folks, because Butler has a lot of really steep hills. In days gone by, they used to close some of them off, and they would just be for sled riding, you know.
Oh, I remember the neighbor had a bobsled.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, if you go in behind the car view mall, our inner stereo used to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
He turned to go down there on the 38.
I know exactly where you are.
Bobsled go up there and go there, come clear down, like, go across the railroad track and up the lower road, and that boy, they come down there out scooting.
Those bobsleds are kind of dangerous. I've ridden them
on
occasion. The problem is you can't steer them at all. I mean, you...
And I'll tell you another thing that's dangerous, too. They're one of those old go-devils.
I never had one of those, never rode one of them.
Yeah, we used to make cars.
You made them? Wow.
Yeah. That was hard to make.
What was that thing? It was just a... like a stick with a seat on it, right? I mean, there wasn't too much more to it than that.
Yeah, if you didn't bring your bells off, boy, you'd go off in a hurry, too.
Yeah. I never rode one of those. I think I'm kind of happy that I did.
Yeah, I figured I'd just leave you know about that car I would deal.
I appreciate that. That's fun. That's funny. Yeah.
Boy, that means we'd wax them up.
And away you go, huh?
Oh, they're going to beat the band. Be good fast for the flat.
Hey, nice to talk to you.
My dad used to get mad at
us. Nice to talk to you, my friend. Thanks so much for calling in.
Yeah.
And stay safe today, okay? Okay. 283-2525, open talk on the It's Your Turn program today. Yeah, winter memories when you were a kid. That's pretty good stuff. Yeah. Pretty good stuff. And I don't know. Your memory is a funny thing. Sometimes it fades. Sometimes you exaggerate things from decades gone by. But it seems to me when I was a kid, we'd get snow by Christmas, and you'd have snow till March. You know, it never really melted away. Some of it would, you know, deteriorate a little, but then you almost always go sled riding, it seemed. Not that way anymore, though. Back to the phones we go. Here's the phone number if you'd like to join us, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hey, you brought back a lot of memories with the lightning gliders or
lightning
whatever.
Lightning gliders, yes.
Yeah. Nowadays, they just have a piece of plastic they ride down over the hill.
Yeah, I've seen that. But...
And they call them sleds. But
lightning glider, not only could you, was it fast, and you could put two or sometimes three people on it, but you could steer it. You know,
it had
a steering mechanism, you know.
Yeah. As far as the go devils, I rode one of those. But I spent more time sitting on my rear end in the snow, I think. They were pretty difficult to control.
Yeah, well, they look pretty flimsy. I've seen them. In fact, somebody told me they made them here in Butler somewhere. There was a place that manufactured them. But they look kind of treacherous to me. I'm not sure I'd ever want to ride one.
Right. The real reason I called is we're so glad to have you back. I don't know what your affliction was or sickness or whatever. It's none of my business. But I'll tell you, I've always considered you to be the Bob Kaufman clone, just about. And if WISR ever loses you, I don't know about the station. You know, it just didn't seem that, although the other people did a fine job, that it just wasn't kosher to me.
You couldn't say anything to me that would make me feel any better than to mention Bob Kaufman was my mentor.
Yes.
He was the guy that hired me here at WISR. Longtime general manager, for folks who didn't know the late Bob Kaufman.
Well, you definitely have a lot of his characteristics.
Well, that's because he taught me.
Yeah. And when he came on the program, you could tell if it was going to be really serious today or not, just by the tone of his voice.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So I just wanted to tell you that, Dave, and I know I don't speak alone. There's a lot of people that feel this way. They probably don't want to say anything, but we're so happy to have you back.
Well, your kind thoughts are very much appreciated, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Stay safe today, okay?
You too. Bye. Okay.
Bye-bye. 283-2525, open talk. Here's a caller who's been waiting for a while. Thanks for your patience, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi.
And I echo the thoughts of the previous caller. Welcome back. And we are glad, so glad to have you.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot.
You're working with the fabric of Butler. I know you're not original, but I think we've all accepted you, and you're going to be okay.
Well, I'm pretty original, you know. I mean, I grew up and spent my elementary years not too far from here.
I understand, yeah. The conversation about the sled kind of made me go back and get everybody else and think about their childhood. I was raised out by the community college.
Mm-hmm.
3 degree, it's called something else later now, but it was called 3 degree Hill. And it went down past what is now the rear entrance to the community college.
Okay.
And on bad winter nights, they, of course, would close it. My dad would put chains on his 54 Ford, and we had a bobsled, which was unlike the things you're describing. It had a steering wheel, and it had front runners that steered right and left. And
I never saw a bobsled like that. That's terrific, because that's the danger of the things. You can't steer them. If you're going toward a tree, you're going to hit the tree. I mean, as simple as that, you know.
You know, you have to bail out. But this one had front runners that were attached to a steering wheel. They were, you know, in my memory, probably a foot or two long on the right and left side.
Mm-hmm.
The sled would hold three good-sized adults or four kids. But my parents would take me over, and either my mom or dad would drive the sled down 3 degree Hill. We would go way down the hill, way past the college entrance, down almost to where it drops onto Route 8. Well, the old way that the road went. And then the other parent would drive the car down, take a tow rope, hook up the sled, and with chains, drive back up 3 degree Hill and swap out, and I would get on the back, and away we would go. And we did that until, I don't know what happened to the sled, you know. In families, things get traded around.
But
the sled, I think, left and went to West Virginia, maybe, with another family member. But that was the greatest thing, and it was so much fun, and a memory that I have from being an only child in the snow in Oak Hill Heights.
Well, you were fortunate to have a ride back up the hill. We had to walk.
Well, you know, that sled was so heavy that we couldn't pull it back up.
Mm-hmm.
It was just me and my mom and dad, and we just couldn't pull it back up the hill. But with the car, we were able to make, you know, two or three runs a night, and then we were whipped. Well, that was it. That was the end of the evening. But the roads, you know, back then it was a country road back then, and they really didn't use it for very much, and they would just shut it down when the snows came.
Good memories, huh?
Yep, great times.
Wow, that's for sure.
Well, thanks for letting me share.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for sharing with us. That's a great story.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. 283-2525. We're getting close to the end of our open talk time. We're going to be chatting with Amy Metrick pretty soon here from Penn State Extension. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. Good to hear you back.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you very much.
I'm going to make this short because the time's running out. I grew up in Gary, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And then Lake Michigan, and this is the humorous thing. I look at the humor of things, and it keeps me going. They had snowdrifts higher than the houses, though.
I know. I know right where that is, right along the shores of Lake Michigan, yeah.
Yeah, but down in Gary, they bring in the snow plow to get the snow out of people's houses because people didn't get out.
Mm-hmm.
But one year, I couldn't help but laugh, they sent the snow plow out. And then the snow plow got stuck. So I couldn't move. The guy running in high snow and asked my father, could you call the city so I could get stuck? So they called the city mayor's office, and here come a bigger snow plow to get the little snow plow out of the snow.
My goodness.
So in Gary, Indiana, they have a little one, a middle, a medium, a big one, and then a gigantic to help get the other snow plows.
Yeah, some of those things we did probably was pretty dangerous. We didn't realize it. Like, you know, I don't know whether I'd want to jump into a snowdrift these days without knowing what was down there, you know.
Yeah, I did jump into snowdrifts off the brooks, but I would do it now, anyway. I think the weather, the moisture in the air has changed everything. And the chemicals, it seems like the ice is a lot slicker. Things seem a little bit different.
Yeah, we've had some climate change. We don't, last couple of winters have been very mild, and now all of a sudden we're getting an old-fashioned one here this year, aren't we?
Yeah.
Listen,
it's probably good.
I have to scoot, but it was great to hear from you today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Good to talk with you. Thanks. 283-2525, our number, 283-2525. Hi, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. Hello?
Yeah, Dave?
Yes, hi.
Number one, we'll welcome you back. We missed you guys.
Oh, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Your help and everything stays well.
Thank you very much.
Getting back to some bobsledding, I don't know whether you're familiar with the road between East Brady and Petrolia. It's called a little village called Queenstown. Oh,
I know it very well, but I've traveled it 100 times.
But we used to get our bobsleds and take it up the hill, past the Hillville Road, up on top of the hill there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know right where it is. Yeah.
And see how far we always wanted to make it down to Martin's Texaco service station down there, but
Brady's Bend, right?
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
You could make it almost the whole way down that. I never did it, but hey, there's a lot of curves in that on that hill, though.
We never made it that far. There was a lot of curves in the road, and that was like 4 or 5 of us used to get on and take off, and then Woods Simmel used to live up on top of the hill there. And wherever we ended up at, he would come down with his Jeep and throw us back up to the top of the hill, and we'd try it again.
Wow.
A lot of broken bones and bruises and everything. I mean,
we used to sled ride at night, too, which when I think about it, we must have been idiots, you know?
Yeah.
No headlights on a sled.
No.
Well, listen,
like you said, there was no steering wheel. I mean, we just had rope on the front to steer, but, I mean, they were heavy back then, and unfortunately, we never made it down, so.
Good memories. Thanks, my friend. Good to talk with you today.
All right. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks a lot. Stay safe, okay?
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. A quick break, and we're going to be talking with Amy Metrick from Penn State Extension here, coming up on WISR in a moment. First, a word from some of the folks who helped make this program possible. We'll be right back.
If you're thinking about buying a car, truck, or SUV, or even if you just bought one, make sure you check out the great rates at Armco Credit Union. Through February 28th, you can get a 36-month loan on new and used vehicles for as low as 1.24 APR. We'll even refinance your loan from another financial institution. It's never been easier to join, so call today or visit armcocu.com for membership and rate information. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program on this snowy, snowy Wednesday. And we're going to be talking on the next segment of the program with Amy Metrick from Penn State Extension. Amy is in charge of the 4-H. She's a 4-H educator and youth development as well. And she joins us by telephone. Amy, thanks for being with us today.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
I know we were scheduled to talk in person, but Mother Nature had other ideas. In fact, I think the extension office is closed today, right?
Yes, it is. Yep, got a phone call saying stay home. So,
nice to be able to talk to you at home. And before we start, let me just repeat a message that we got from our newsroom, I guess about 15 minutes ago. Butler Transit Authority has now canceled all bus service for the rest of the day. Butler Transit Authority canceling all bus service. Folks, it's not a whole lot better right now. In fact, in some places, it's even worse than it was this morning. So 4-H, first of all, Amy Metrick, 4-H is alive and well and thriving, isn't it, in Butler County?
Yes, it is. We have right now, we have just shy of 30 clubs. And in those 30 clubs, we have about almost 315 members. So we're doing very well with the projects. We have livestock projects, sewing, cooking, archery, any kind of shooting sports, and we even have a robotics club. So, No, we are doing very well, and we're growing, which is what we like to see.
Now, here we are in the dead of winter. I know that most 4-H'ers, if they're doing projects, particularly 4-H young men and women who are raising animals, they're well underway. Some of them have to start early in the fall to be ready for the Butler Farm Show this summer. But other activities are going on. For one thing, the State Farm Show is always held in early January. And usually there are some local 4-H'ers who are down in Harrisburg to participate. Was that the case this year? Can you give us a little report on what happened at the State Farm Show?
Yeah, this year, Butler County, the 4-H'ers, we had about 21 members. And out of those members, we had them taking projects down in the farm products, whether they did pictures or they entered some kind of poster. They did that. And then we had a bunch of kids showing rabbits. We had one gentleman that took 18, I'm sorry, and out of those, 8 of them placed first, so he was pretty proud of that.
Wow.
And then we had one girl take chickens. We had another young lady take out some sheep, and she actually got champion Suffolk of her sheep breed, so she did wonderful in that. We had a young lady take out some dairy cattle, and she had 5 out there, and she did fabulous as well. And so we had goats, and so, yeah, we had a lot of kids out there representing Butler County.
I've never actually been in person to the farm show, but for the last quite a few years, it's been on TV. You know, on the PCN, the Pennsylvania Cable Network. I didn't get to see much of it this year, though, because I was on medical leave. So I like to watch some of that stuff that's going on down there. I asked somebody one time, why in the name of heaven do you ever have the State Farm Show in January? And they said, can you think of another time of year when farmers would be able to go?
Exactly.
it's kind of a downtime, right, for farmers, and that gives them a chance to head to Harrisburg for the big show every year. So,
yeah, they actually, the State Farm Show is, I believe, the nation's largest agricultural exposition held under one roof. Mm-hmm. So it's something to see. It's pretty neat.
And I know this only from talking with some 4-H kids over the past several years, there are leadership groups. There might even be a leadership club, isn't there, where there are representatives from all of the other clubs who meet on a regular basis to plan events and stuff?
Yes, we have the Youth Council.
That's what it is. I couldn't think of the
correct
name of it.
Yeah. They meet once a month. And they are representatives from each club in the county. So each county has 2 kids that they have elected, and they come to this club meeting, and they help plan our 4-H spring kickoff, our officers training. They help with set up for the petting zoo at the Butler Fair, and then they help with the dance at the end of the week at the Butler Farm Show, and they just do all kinds of stuff to help make 4-H be great.
Now, I know there was a leadership conference up at the university fairly recently. Did any of our kids from Butler County attend that, Amy?
Yes, actually we had. It's the State Leadership Conference, and it was held up at Penn State. And it is actually put on by the 4-H State Council, which actually we have a representative from Butler on that, Sherlann Harmon. I believe she's the secretary. Mm-hmm. So she's representing the western half of the state out here. But those kids put together a weekend full of stuff for kids to come out. We had 22 kids from Butler participate. And then we had 2 younger kids who participated in Junior SLC, the Junior State Leadership Conference. So we had 24 Butler County 4-H'ers out there, and while they're out there, they get to go to different workshops, and they range in stuff from leadership skills to setting goals. Some of them are for fun, like learning about global agriculture and things like that, but the kids really enjoy it. They get to spend the weekend out at the Penn Stater in the hotel. They get to get dressed up. They get to go to a dance. So they just have a great time. It's one of the most, their most favorite things that they go to.
We're talking, listeners, if you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn, we're talking with Amy Metrick. She is the local Penn State Extension 4-H educator. As that 4-H educator, do you ever get a chance to go along on some of these outings, Amy, or do you stay home?
I do. I don't get to go on all of them. I'm actually going to be able to go to science camp, which is going to be happening in May. It's animal science camp. Kids get to learn about dairy, equine, and livestock, so that is one I'll get to go to. But regionally here, we have some events that I get to go to. We have the camp in the spring, Northwest PA 4-H camp, and then we also have a team leadership retreat. That's going to be held here in April down in Fonville.
What about Capital Days? I know that's an event that's coming up. I don't know. I'm guessing that's in Harrisburg. Am I right on that?
That is correct, yeah. Capital Days is going to be happening in March, and it's actually pretty neat. The kids get to go out. They get to talk to the different legislators from their area, and they get to have breakfast with them and just talk to them in person, kind of a more informal setting. And the kids also, they get to work on a bill. They'll be get to know the ins and the outs and the language of how bills come to be. So it's pretty neat, and it's a good learning experience.
What a great opportunity for these young men and women. I mean, in addition to their regular 4-H work, whatever particular club they're involved with, to have these leadership opportunities, heck, to be able to go to Harrisburg, to the nation's capital for 2 or 3 days, to be able to go to Penn State, up to the university for that conference, and hey, must be pretty neat to be able to walk around on campus, you know, when you're there for a couple of days. That's nice, huh?
It is, yeah. The kids love it. Get to get a creamery, maybe. So who doesn't love ice cream?
Especially the Penn State Creamery, yeah.
Absolutely.
You had to mention that because I was getting kind of hungry here. You had to mention Penn State Creamery ice cream.
Penn Good
State,
stuff.
Penn State has changed. Penn State. 4-H has changed markedly over the past couple of generations. I mean, it started out almost entirely as agricultural-based. Now, there are still agricultural and animal clubs, but it's much more than that. It's not your grandfather's 4-H anymore, is it, Amy?
No. Actually, my grandmother was in 4-H, and her project was organizing a closet. That is what she did her 4-H project on. So, yeah, we still have those kinds of, you know, different projects and things like that relating to this home economic type stuff, but there is a lot of stuff. We focus a lot on science now. Our robotics club actually just bought some new robots because even that technology has changed, so there's lots of new stuff out there, and it's always changing.
Your robots were out of date already. Wow.
They were, yes. It's hard to believe.
Well, you never know. You know, yesterday they sent up a sports car into outer space. Did you see those pictures of that?
I did not, no.
No, I'm serious. It's a car. It's now orbiting the Earth, and it's eventually going to go to Mars. If you'd have told me that was going to happen 10 years ago, I'd have thought you were crazy. Well, I'll tell you something. People may chuckle at your grandmother's project, organizing a closet. I know when I was 4-H age, I would have loved to have taken some food science classes and learn a little bit about that, because you know, when I got out of school, I didn't know how to cook anything, you know. And when I was in school, only the girls took food science or home ec. The boys all took shop class. So I could very quickly turn out a pair of bookends, but I couldn't cook a meal.
Yep, we do have a few boys in our sewing club. They're a little few and far between, but we do have them, and they do a fantastic job whenever they do, so it's good to see that.
The climax of the 4-H year, I would have to say, is always Butler Farm Show Week, right?
Correct, yeah, that's our roundup. All the kids bring their projects, show them off, whether it's their bread that they've made or maybe a scarf that they crocheted, or it's their pig or their lamb. They take them out there, get judged, get ribbons, and just a good time.
Is there online capabilities for people to see just what 4-H clubs you have? Is there a master list somewhere?
Yes, there is. So if you go to the website, it is extension.psu.edu, and you just find Butler County. You'll find Butler County 4-H, very easy. And on there, there's a listing of all the projects that 4-H offers. There's a listing of all the clubs. And if you can't find it that way, you can always call the extension office. Phone number there is 724-287-4761.
And you do not have to be from a farm family to be involved in 4-H anymore, right?
That is correct. No, we have kids that have maybe even never stepped foot on a farm. So that it has no longer that thought is still there, but there's so much more that we offer.
How often do the clubs meet, or does it vary depending on what club you're in?
It varies depending on clubs and projects, but most clubs meet once a month.
Mm-hmm.
They usually meet in the evenings. They have a business meeting. They run it parliamentary procedure, the whole nine yards. They do that. And then they usually have an educational portion. So meetings sometimes take hour and a half to have the whole thing, and you're in and out. It's not too bad.
And where do they meet, or does that depend on which club you're involved in as well?
Depends on the club. Some meet at the extension office. Some meet down in the Sarver area, Saxonburg. And then others meet up in Slippery Rock. And then there's a few right here in the middle in Butler. So, but yes, they meet all throughout the county. We have all the projects throughout the county that we can find you a club.
Some people may be learning about the new 4-H for the first time as they listen to us. Do you, if you have young people who you think might be helped by this or might be interested, do you have to wait until next September to join, or can you join kind of midstream during the year like right now?
You can join now. Everybody has to be enrolled by June 1st, so right now is perfect time. Most clubs are gearing back up from after the holiday time.
I see.
So they're really just starting getting rolling here. But, yeah, most certainly you can join now. To be in 4-H, you have to be at least 8 years old by January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So if you turned 8 at the end of January, you're going to have to wait another year. But if you turn 8 in December, you're more than welcome to join us now. Same goes, there's an upper age of 18, and the January 1st rule applies there as well.
Okay. 8 to 18. You were involved in 4-H when you were younger, right?
I was, yes. I showed pigs and sheep, and I had one of those January birthdays that I had to wait a whole year until I could show in 4-H, and I think that was probably the longest year.
You mentioned your grandmother. I know your dad was involved in 4-H, so it's a family tradition for you, huh?
It is, yes. All my cousins, my sister, we've all been in 4-H in some aspect.
Is it expensive for to enroll kids in a 4-H club?
No, it is a $20 material fee, and that'll cover all of your books that you receive, any information that you need from us. All of that is covered under that $20, so it is not bad at all. And that's for the year, $20 for the year.
Another thing that I think is a great advantage for, especially for kids as they get into their junior high and senior high ages, you tend to, and it's only natural, you tend to have friends within your own school. Those are the ones you see every day. But if you're involved in 4-H, you can really expand your circle of friends, your acquaintances, because there will be people in the club from many different school districts. These would be kids you'd never even get a chance to meet otherwise.
Correct. Yeah, it's not segregated by school district, like you said. There's kids from Slippery Rock, and there's kids from even Freeport that come up here and are a part of the 4-H club, and you get to know them and carry those lifelong friendships.
Are there adult volunteers who help to operate the program?
There are, yeah. Each club has at least 2 adult volunteers that help run the club. So in the county, we have about 80 adult volunteers that help us. And they are just that. They're volunteers. They give of their time to help grow these kids and make them into wonderful young adults.
Boy, where would we be without those volunteers, huh? Wow.
I know. We love our volunteers. They're great.
Well, it's good to get an update on 4-H, and my goodness, it's nice to hear about good things that happen at the State Farm Show. more than 20 Butler 4-H'ers who participated down there. And that was, it was like the tail end of the first week of January, I think, wasn't it?
Correct. That is correct. I don't remember the exact dates, but you're right. It was in the first full week of January.
And then several youth from Butler County 4-H participated in the state leadership conference up at the university at Penn State, and that was just a couple of weeks ago. And then Capital Days coming up in March, in mid-March, where 4-H youth will be in Harrisburg meeting with elected officials over breakfast, talking with them about the process of state government and so on and so forth. Wonderful trip down there, too. And this, in addition to all of the regular activities at the various clubs, which you now said, I think, Amy, number over 30 in Butler County, is that right?
Yep, 30 clubs, about 315 kids involved.
Well, as we wrap up, give us that website again where people can get more information about the clubs and the projects.
It is extension.psu.edu. And then you will just search for Butler County. And then if you can't find us that way, phone number is 724-287-4761.
Ask for Amy. That's who we've been talking to. Amy Metrick, who heads up youth development and is the 4-H educator for Penn State Extension. Now, I know the Penn State Extension model has changed. Are you still responsible mainly for Butler County, or does your work extend into neighboring counties as well, Amy?
Nope, I just cover Butler County, but we all help each other, so it works out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's enough, given the more than 30 clubs. Listen, I'll say goodbye here. Stay safe, and please say hello to your dad for me, okay?
I will do that.
Nice to talk with you, Amy. And again, special thanks. I know your office is closed. You're off today. Special thanks for calling us from home and chatting with us. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're more than welcome. You have a great day.
You too. So long now.
Bye-bye.
She's just a lovely person. Amy Metrick, 4-H educator and head of youth development for 4-H here in Butler County through Penn State University. Okay, we're going to take a break. We have had, and this is no surprise, we've had some guests who had to cancel today that couldn't make it because of the horrendous weather, but we're going to take the opportunity for a second listen to some interviews that we've done in the past, a couple of rather shorter ones, but I thought they were fascinating. The first one is by Rosemary Sullivan. We talked with her about Stalin's daughter, Joseph Stalin, the brutal dictator of the Soviet Union, had a daughter, Svetlana. She lived for quite a while in the United States. Who knew? I didn't know until I talked to Rosemary. She'll be with us next. And then our final interview will be a few minutes with a man named Michael Trinkline. And we talked with him, it was actually a couple of years ago that we talked with him, about his book, Lost States. And these are stories of states that almost came into being, almost, but they didn't. And some of them are funny, some of them are, it's kind of scary to think that this might have been it. They came close, folks. Lost States. That's to come a little bit later. But first, right after this break, we talk with Rosemary Sullivan about Stalin's daughter. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. We'll be right back.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there stops here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem, the bus will get you there. Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Welcome, listeners. Nice to have you with us. And on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest visits with us by telephone. She is author Rosemary Sullivan, who has written a fascinating, fascinating book about Stalin's daughter. In fact, that's the title, Stalin's daughter. Rosemary Sullivan, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
I think most people are aware of the fact that Joseph Stalin had a daughter. She was in the news occasionally when she lived in the United States. I knew of her name. I knew nothing else until I got the review copy of your book. What a tortured and fascinating life, huh?
Absolutely. Some reviewers have called it a kind of epic life. The momentum never stops.
Yes. Well, let's talk a little bit about, first of all, your research. This is a biography that obviously could not have been written until the breakup of the Soviet Union. You did have access to some of the papers of decades gone by, did you not?
I had access to FBI files, NARA files, wonderful files under Freedom of Information in the United States. By the time I was in Russia in 2013, KGB files were already closed. So, no, I did not have access to the secret police files. What I had access to were the state files, which were wonderful. I had the correspondence, which I don't think has been seen in full before, between Svetlana and her father from when she was 7 to when she was about 16. I had access to the correspondence between Nadia, his wife, and Stalin before she committed suicide in 1932. And actually, at the Hoover Institute in California, there was a collection of Svetlana's papers, which included some KGB documents that Svetlana herself had somehow managed to obtain. The only explanation, of course, is that they were obtained for her through the CIA. In fact, I was just going to add that in addition to that, I was able to do 40 interviews with individuals in the Soviet Union in Russia with Stalin's grandson, Sasha Brodomsky, with a number of her cousins, with people in Georgia, and then friends in London, and with the CIA officer, Robert Rail, in the United States, and people right across the United States, including her daughter, Olga, who, of course, now is Chris Evans. And some of these people have since passed away. So, in fact, it was a moment of serendipity, just the moment when you could write this book.
It's difficult to imagine what it would have been like to have been born as the daughter of Joseph Stalin. And, in fact, as you detail many, many times in your book, Svetlana Aliyeva carried this oppressive weight around with her for her entire life, didn't she?
She said, in fact, that no matter where I go, to an island, to Australia, I will always be the political prisoner of my father's name. Though she also said that you can't regret your life, though I do regret my mother didn't marry a carpenter. So she had a kind of strange humor with which she dealt with this, but it was impossible for people to meet her and not think immediately Stalin's daughter. The projection was always there. She could never escape it.
Yeah. We're talking, listeners, with Rosemary Sullivan, who has written an incredibly researched and detailed biography of Stalin's daughter, the extraordinary and tumultuous life of Svetlana Aliyeva. A little bit about, and obviously we're just scratching the surface here in the brief time that we have available, Rosemary, but Svetlana was born in 1926. I understand she was Joseph Stalin's favorite child.
She was the little butterfly, the mosca, she was the one who could quiet him down in his rages by wrapping her little hands around his boots. After her mother's death, he told her, never ask command, and called himself her first secretary. So she would write little notes saying, first secretary, take me to the movies. And he would write back, of course I will, your loving papa, the poor peasant Joseph Stalin. So there was this kind of cat and mouse game that was played between them. But the first part of Svetlana's life was magical. Of course, she was the princess in the Kremlin. They had the Zubalovo dacha, where it was a kind of Chekhov-like life. Grandfathers, grandmothers, relatives visiting. And then everything went dark when Stalin initiated the terror of the late 30s.
And, of course, her youth had its tragedies as well. She was only 6 years old, just over 6 years old, when her mother, Nadia, committed suicide. But she never knew that it was a suicide until much, much later. She was never told.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it, the secrecy that Stalin could exert in the Kremlin. All the organs, as they were called, the secret police, knew that it had been suicide, but nobody was allowed to speak. And in the family, though some family members knew it was suicide, nobody ever said that. So Svetlana thought her mother had died of appendicitis until at the age of 16 in 1942, when she was encouraged to read English papers, she read in an American magazine that her mother had committed suicide. So she ran to her grandmother and said, "Grandma, is it true?" And Grandma Olga said, "Yes." How could she do that? And at that moment, the blackness of being abandoned by your mother, let alone having to deal with the volatility of your papa, confronted Solana.
Well, you can easily see how her life began to fall apart in many ways, even early on. She was married twice and divorced twice while still in her early 20s. Wow, wow.
Well, you know, at the age of 16, she fell in love with a famous filmmaker, Alexei Kapler. And when her father found out, it was a platonic affair, as only a 16-year-old can have. When her father found out, he had Kapler arrested, sent to the Lublyanka for a year of solitary confinement, and then off to the Gulag. And Solana understood that was personal. It was Papa doing that. And then after that, she married her school friend, Muratsov, and her father was so angry that he refused ever to meet his son-in-law, and he only met his grandson four times. The alienation between Solana and her father began then. But her second marriage was a kind of a marriage of dynasties. It was initiated by her father, and she accepted it. It was a man called Yuri Zanov, who was the son of one of his ministers, and it only lasted 2 years. But, you know, divorce in the Soviet Union at that time was a pretty common affair. People went, the role of being the single mother left with the children was pretty common then.
We're talking, listeners, with Rosemary Sullivan, author of Stalin's Daughter. We need to take a quick break. We'll continue our conversation with Rosemary Sullivan right after these words.
Did you know that if you are a chiropractic patient at Applewood Chiropractic, a wellness program with unlimited use of their executive-level fitness center may be covered by your insurance? Personalized wellness plans are designed to assist patients with treatment and preventative care. In addition to unlimited use of their safe, clean, non-intimidating fitness center, wellness plans include discounts on additional chiropractic visits, supplements, and 6 bioimpedance analyses per year. To learn more, call Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, 724-283-0518, or visit applewoodchiro.com.
Welcome back, listeners. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. If you're joining us a little bit late in this segment, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest visiting with us by telephone is Rosemary Sullivan, author of a heavily researched biography of Stalin's Daughter, The Extraordinary and Tumultuous Life of Svetlana Aliyeva. So she was married twice, divorced twice in her early 20s. Her father, of course, was still alive at this time. Joseph Stalin didn't die until the early 50s. Did he die a natural death, by the way?
He did. It was really a cerebral hemorrhage. He died in 1953. It was 5 slow days of dying. And one of the impressive things, Solana writes about that in her memoir, 20 Letters to a Friend, was his very last gesture was one of rage and what she felt was defiance at the world and at death, though, in fact, Khrushchev, who was standing beside, thought it was simply the last gesture of a dying organism. But, it was a very dramatic death.
Did the shift in power, and it was pretty dramatic after Stalin died, did that, obviously, that affected Svetlana?
Yes, and it was a pretty ruthless shift in power. It should have Beria felt that he would be the replacement for Stalin, and by the summer he was executed, and Khrushchev cemented power. In 1956, as you know, Khrushchev's secret speech was delivered to the Communist Party, and in that secret speech he revealed that Stalin was the one who created the notion of enemies of the people, had people arrested, confessions coerced under torture, and it was an incredible exposure and a complete shock because Stalin was still the man who had won the Second World War, the great leader. And here was Solana sitting at her institute where she was studying, the Gorky Institute, as this speech was read. And can you imagine the impact on her as all this rage would have been turned against her as Stalin's daughter?
In the mid to late 60s, she walked into the American Embassy in New Delhi, India, seeking asylum. the United States government didn't accept that initially, though, did they? They weren't quite sure what to do with her.
They weren't. When she walked in, one of the things she first things she said, and this is the report of Robert Rayl, who was an undercover CIA officer, she said, "Well, you may not believe this, I'm Stalin's daughter." And the consul, George Huey, said, "The Stalin?" They weren't sure whether she was whether she was a counteragent, a secret, you know, an infiltrator, or just a crazy woman. And when they sent a telegram to the headquarters, turned out that the CIA, the FBI, or the State Department, none of them had any files on Svetlana Alilulieva, nor did they have any information that Stalin had a daughter. So what did they do with this woman? But the enlightened and remarkable Chester Bowles decided that she had her passport, she had an Indian visa, and he gave her a tourist visa to travel to the United States because she could leave legally. Of course, the Soviets were always convinced it was a CIA plot to kidnap Svetlana. But what happened was, on the way to Rome, the Undersecretary of State in the Johnson administration, Foy Kohler, sent a telegram to New Delhi and said, "Kick her out. Have nothing to do with her." But the response from New Delhi was, "You're too late. She's already on the plane." So when she got to Rome, instead of proceeding to the United States, the State Department looked for a country to take her, and finally the Swiss took her in, briefly, because then she was finally granted a tourist visa to come to the United States.
And she lived in the United States.
Eventually.
She lived in the United States for a while.
Until the age of 85, and became an American citizen in 1987.
She was also quite wealthy. I had no idea about this when she arrived in the U.S. She was wealthy because of book sales of her memoir, but then, this is fascinating, it's almost hard to believe, she lost most of her money due to the manipulations of the widow of Frank Lloyd Wright. Holy moly. And you detail all of this incredible story in your book, too.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Svetlana was a Soviet. She did not know what money was. She didn't know there was such a thing as money, nor a public. And suddenly, her memoir was sold for $1.5 million. When she got to the United States, there were more people to greet her at the airport than greeted the Beatles. And she didn't even know how to open a bank account. When she was invited by Olga Vanna Wright to the Taliesin Foundation in 1970, it never occurred to her that she might be the object of a plot. Olga Vanna wanted Svetlana's millions to support her foundation and arranged the marriage between her and the lead architect, Wesley Peters.
Well, she did get a daughter out of that ill-fated relationship, her daughter, Olga. Our time runs
that
short.
Was the most...
Yeah, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Our time runs short. What eventually happened to Svetlana? She died when?
She died in 2011 at the age of 85 in Wisconsin. She was then living in a senior's residence. And according to her daughter, Olga took the name Chris Evans. She changed her name to Chrissy when she was 10 years old because she didn't want to be a Rusky. According to Chris, her mother was reconciled to her life and had a kind of spirituality that was moving. She really affirmed life.
A contradictory figure, an emotional figure, a fascinating life, Stalin's daughter, by Rosemary Sullivan, who has written biographies, literary criticism, lots of stuff. And she has also recently made an officer of the Order of Canada, the country's highest civilian honor. That was just 3 years ago. For outstanding contributions to Canadian literature and culture. Congratulations on that, Rosemary. That's quite an honor.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for chatting with us today. Also, some marvelous pictures in the book, by the way, including a photograph on the cover with Stalin giving Svetlana a hug, and what a precious smile she has. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you. It was great.
We stand the tallest when we stoop to help others. That's one of the things they love to say at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. And you can help others very easily. If you have items that you don't need anymore when you're cleaning out a closet or the attic or whatever, clothing, knickknacks, furniture, please consider donating items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store. It's in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 South. They'll sell those items there. Somebody can use them at a price they ordinarily couldn't afford. And here's the great thing. Every penny of the proceeds from the operation of the thrift store go toward funding the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank and their client aid program. So it's win-win-win all the way around. You didn't want these things anymore anyway. Why put them in the landfill? Why not put them to good use and help the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others? Thrift store located Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 South. Plenty of free parking right outside the door. Drop-off bins are right inside the front door. And if you've got big stuff or a lot of stuff, call them and they'll come get it. Indeed, we stand the tallest when we stoop to help others. St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
We're very pleased to be able to talk for a few minutes today here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR with author Michael Trinkline. Dave Malarkey is my name. Michael, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
Good to be here.
When I heard about your book, Lost States, I said, that's intriguing. And then when I heard that our state of Pennsylvania would have been involved in this story, I said, I have to talk to that gentleman. The title of your book is Lost States, True Stories of Texlahoma, Transylvania, and Other States That Never Made It. Is your book just published, Michael?
Yes, it's just out in stores now, yeah.
So we should find it in bookstores, and I'm sure at the usual online sites as well, eh?
That is correct, yes.
I recall hearing a story about this a long, long time ago. It was certainly not in my history class when I was in high school or undergraduate school. I must have seen a Wire story about it or something. I have no memory of it whatsoever, and I wasn't actually sure that I didn't dream about it. So you're telling me that there really was an effort, and according to your book, by several notable people, to have us with many, many more states than we ended up with here in the U.S.?
Yeah, you know, we remember the 50 winners, but there were a lot of losers in the process of creating the 50 states, and that's what the book is about, because we can learn a lot from those losers, the states that didn't quite make it. You know, one really good example is a state, the original versions of West Virginia tried to swallow up your area up there, actually, Pittsburgh and the regions around Pittsburgh. That would have been a state called Vandalia, dating back to the mid-1700s. Its state didn't make it, but the basic idea did come in later and became West Virginia, but you guys got put in Pennsylvania instead.
You know, that is where I read about it. It just occurred to me when you mentioned that name, Vandalia. And this came up, it was in a Wire story a couple of years ago. We were celebrating, marking the 250th anniversary of the French and Indian War, much of which took place here in western Pennsylvania. George Washington, then a young British military officer in his 20s, believe it or not, was here a couple of times. And so there were a lot of stories on the Wire and in the newspapers and on TV and radio here in our area about the war and Washington's visit and so on and so forth. And that's where I saw it. One of the stories said that there was almost another state carved out. And as I recall, the border of Pennsylvania and this state of Vandalia would have been the Ohio and the Allegheny River, which would have meant that for folks in our area who are very familiar with Pittsburgh, you would go from downtown Pittsburgh across the river to the Pirate Ballpark at PNC Park or across the river to the Steelers' Heinz Field, and you would be in a different state.
That is correct. And, you know, that isn't the only example of your area. In fact, one of the original plans in the 1780s was to create a state from the eastern half of Ohio, a state that would have been called Washington, actually, perhaps because of the events you're talking about, yeah.
I never knew about that.
Well, another great example is, you know, Connecticut for many years in the 1600s and 1700s felt they had a claim to a swath of land all the way across the country, including what's most of northern Pennsylvania. And they acted on it. They settled it, and they created what would have been a state called Wyoming or Westmoreland, kind of starting at Wilkes-Barre and kind of moving westward. And that state almost came to be. There were actually wars there, though, Yankee-Pennamite wars about that, you know, piece of land. Would it be a separate state or would it be Pennsylvania? So it's an interesting part of the history.
I believe, and I have not memorized all 67 counties in Pennsylvania, but I think we still have a county named after that.
Yes, you actually do, yeah. The Wyoming
County. Wyoming County. I never realized the derivation before. This is fascinating stuff, and listeners, I told you, as soon as I heard about it, I wanted to talk to our guest. If you're joining us a few minutes late here on It's Your Turn, he is author Michael Trinkline. And lest people get the mistaken opinion, Michael, that this was, you know, the wacko idea of a couple of people who are out on the fringe of politics way back when, there were some pretty notable people in American history who were proponents of this, were there not?
Oh, yes. I mean, a good example would be Daniel Boone. We all learned about him. What we may not have learned about him in the history books is that he set up, or tried to set up, what would have been the 14th state, which he called Transylvania. This is long before vampires. This would have been a state, because Sylvania, of course, means a pleasant, woodsy area, as you well know there. Mm-hmm. And his state actually didn't make it, but it did come back a few years later with a new name, Kentucky.
That would have been the same area that he wanted to call Transylvania.
Exactly.
Let's talk about the whole history of the original 13 colonies. As I recall from my history book, and I'm going back quite a few years here, Michael, there were disputes from the very beginning, even before we were the fledgling country of the United States. As I recall, the Massachusetts Bay Colony, one of the first, was also one of the first to have trouble, and the name Roger Williams pops into my mind. I may be slightly off on that, but wasn't he the guy who eventually split away and founded Rhode Island? Split away from Massachusetts Bay Colony?
That's absolutely true. And what you notice in New England as a result of that, all those split-offs in those early days, is there are a lot of states up there, a lot of very small states. And this is a thing that particularly annoys people in, surprisingly, Texas, because New England, which is smaller than Texas, has, you know, 10 or 12 senators. Texas only has two. And so for a long time, Texas has been trying to split up in order to get a little more representation in Congress.
Never thought about that angle. But there are a lot of angles to pursue when you begin to discuss the lost states. I'm also trying to remember, you mentioned Connecticut that had land claims on much of what is now northern Pennsylvania. Virginia also claimed almost the entire, what's now the entire western half of Pennsylvania, from the Allegheny Mountains on over to the Ohio border. And this was as late as the mid-1700s, the mid-1800s. In fact, it was under orders from the governor of Virginia that George Washington made his trek into western Pennsylvania. He was, in so many words, telling the French to get out of Dodge. They had a series of forts along the Allegheny and the Ohio rivers, and the English wanted that territory. They didn't want the French in there. The French felt they had a claim from their early explorations, LaSalle and Marquette and Joliet and all those guys. And the only reason that George Washington came here was under the orders of the governor of Virginia, because Virginia claimed this territory. I'm not actually sure how that all got settled out. It may have been part of what you were talking about earlier in the whole settlement of the West Virginia deal, because West Virginia was actually split off from Virginia, wasn't it? The original Virginia?
Yes, that's interesting. interesting. The idea dates back to the 1700s, but it, of course, didn't happen until just before the, or right in the beginning of the Civil War. And West Virginia is one of only two examples where a state actually split to create a new state. And the Constitution provides for this. It can still happen even today. If you want to create a new state and you get your state legislature to sign off, you can actually do so. And West Virginia is a state that's split off from Virginia. Although there's still historians who say that wasn't quite done properly. There was occupation of the Union forces, whatever. I don't know the details of that. But the other example is Maine. Originally, Maine was a part of Massachusetts, and they complained enough that Massachusetts set them free and let them become their own state. So it's something that can happen and could still happen.
That's a kind of a bizarre case, maybe worth talking about for a minute or so, because people who know their geography or maybe have traveled through New England are kind of scratching their heads a little bit. They're saying, wait a minute, Maine was once a part of Massachusetts. They're not even connected. They are not adjacent states. There are two states in the middle between them, New Hampshire and Vermont.
That is true, but Maine was sort of seen as was called the North District of Massachusetts, and it was kind of a territory that no one really thought much about in the earliest days because it wasn't heavily populated. But once people started going there, they wanted a little bit of independence. And in fact, it's kind of funny. I mean, you think of that whole region. I mean, one of the stories in the book is about Vermont. Vermont's original name was New Connecticut, actually, and they were really interesting. They actually proposed the notion of actually joining Canada or creating themselves as a separate country, but finally they decided to join the United States.
Has most of the these stories which you recount in your book, Lost States, did most of this take place earlier in our nation's history? I mean, I can't imagine today, you know, for example, some state legislature, pick a state, any one, acquiescing to a portion of their territory seceding and becoming a new state. Attitudes must have been different in the earlier part of our nation's history.
Well, you know, that's true in one sense, but the same sense, throughout our history, we've been kind of melding, reformulating, and changing the map. I mean, there are efforts today to do so. You're right. They're long shots. I mean, one good example is Jefferson, the state of Jefferson, which would be Northern California and Southern Oregon. They want to create a separate state there. Or the state of Lincoln, which would, you know, the Pacific Northwest is so poorly designed map-wise that people of northern Idaho and eastern or Washington would like to create their own state. And these movements continue. You're right, it's hard to imagine any state giving up power and giving up territory, but we may add states other ways. I mean, Puerto Rico, just last week there was a bill passed in the House of Representatives, actually passed, that would be kind of a first step towards Puerto Rican statehood. So we may not be dividing up our states right now. We may be adding new territory. You never know.
We're talking to, if you're joining us a few minutes late, listeners, on It's Your Turn today here on WISR. We're talking with author Michael Trinkline, who's just published a book entitled The Lost States, True Stories of Texlahoma, Transylvania, and Other States That Never Made It. We'll continue our conversation here in just a moment.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 18, 1, 8. The pick 3 is 278, 278. Pick 4, 1286. And the pick 5, 00814. And the wild ball for each of those is 1. Then your treasure hunt, 3, 8, 19, 23, and 28. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
It's that time of year. Sniffles, coughing, chills, and everything else that comes with cold and flu season. At Institute Hill Pharmacy, they want to get you feeling better as soon as possible. Customer service is their number one priority, so you will have your prescription in a matter of minutes and be on your way to feeling better fast. Stop by your locally owned Institute Hill Pharmacy at 937 East Jefferson Street. Call 285-3693 or check them out on Facebook. And don't forget, Institute Hill Pharmacy has great 99-cent greeting cards, retailer gift cards, and specialty gifts for all occasions. Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
Nice to have you with us today on It's Your Turn. We're talking with author Michael Trinkline. Tell us a little bit about some of the other stories that we'll find in your book. You mentioned Transylvania and the Daniel Boone connection there. What's the story behind Texlahoma, for goodness sakes?
Well, you know, back in the 1920s, everybody was getting their new Model T car, and they didn't have very good roads to drive them on, especially in rural areas. So rural people, and this is an example of that, in the panhandle of Oklahoma and the panhandle of Texas, were upset they weren't getting good roads, good infrastructure, and so they decided to begin the process of forming a state from that area. Now, it didn't get very far, but it's a very recurring theme where, you know, rural areas feel like they aren't getting the proper representation, and, you know, the Constitution lets you at least begin the process to create your own state, and that's what they did in Texoklahoma.
I had no idea until your book that the U.S. Constitution actually provided for this. So, and what that tells us, Michael, is that obviously, this was something that was foreseen by the founding fathers, by the authors of the Constitution. They must have realized that this would have been an issue. Otherwise, they would never have put it in there.
Yes, that's true. And in fact, one of the even more strange things in the Constitution is it provides for the joining of states. So should two states ever want to merge, the Constitution allows for that, too. Now, that just seems preposterous. Why would anyone want to merge? But, you know, maybe in these tough economic times that might actually happen. Who knows?
You mentioned during the first part of our conversation the feelings of many in the state of Texas. And, you know, if you step back and objectively look at that, I suppose you could understand it. Texas has two U.S. senators, while the New England states, all of New England, which is smaller than Texas, has, you know, 10 or 12 senators, depending on how you count it. What about very, very populated but very small geographical areas? And this is something else I did not know about until your book. There have been several efforts down through the years to make Long Island a state. Long Island, of course, part of New York, has more population than 20 other existing states. But they've never been able to achieve statehood, although I guess they've tried several times.
Well, and in fact, they've tried as recently as last year. There were efforts and movements to separate out Long Island. And that, of course, goes back, you're right, back to the 1890s, really. The issue there is, yeah, Long Island is a prosperous place, and it's bigger than Rhode Island, so it's big enough to become a state. It has enough of an economy. And they kind of feel like what happens is they give their money to the state legislature, and they don't get that money back. That tax money. So, you know, that's the genesis behind that movement in Long Island. And, you know, because a lot of our states are poorly designed, these efforts keep cropping up over and over and over again.
Poorly designed. Some state boundaries are physical boundaries, geographical boundaries, rivers, coastlines, so obviously, so on and so forth. But some of the lines are drawn by man and, as a result, very, very arbitrary, are they not?
Yeah, you look at all those square states out west, and they, you know, were often drawn for ease of the map maker and the surveyors, but often don't reflect what are sort of the natural boundaries. One example in the book is the state of Deseret, which was a very serious effort to create a much larger version of Utah, which would have included Nevada and parts of Arizona, and actually makes a lot of sense. The problem is that the federal government was not happy with the people out there at that time because they were, frankly, polygamous, and the government didn't like that, so they sliced down that state of Deseret and made a much smaller state of Utah.
We mentioned Long Island attempting to become a state. The city of Chicago has also tried this, and also unsuccessfully, I take it.
Yeah, you know, pretty much every big city at one time or another has toyed with the notion of becoming a state. It happened in New York, it's in Detroit. And Chicago is an excellent example where what happened in the 20s, Chicago grew tremendously by millions of people, but the state legislature, which was controlled by downstate farmers, wouldn't redistrict. So Chicago wasn't getting proper representation. And so the farmers were happy they wouldn't do it. It was actually illegal, but they still did it. And so Chicago said, well, we'll show you guys. We'll just create our own state. And the efforts were begun. Of course, that didn't materialize, but it is an example of what happens when people get frustrated. I'm glad to be in a country where when people get mad at each other, they, you know, they do things like this rather than fight a war with each other. So that's the good side.
Michael J. Trinklein is our guest. In addition to being an author, Michael also wrote and produced the Emmy-nominated PBS documentary Pioneers of Television just a couple of years ago, as well as earlier efforts, The Gold Rush, and the Oregon Trail. That may be one reason why some of you listeners may be just scratching your head a little bit, saying, somehow I've heard that name before, Michael Trinklein. And we're talking with him today because he just published a book entitled Lost States. You have a story in your book that there's actually a country that is desirous of becoming a state. It's the nation of Albania. Is this for real, or is this kind of pie in the sky?
Well, it's sort of both in a sense. I mean, it's for real in the sense that a lot of Albanians would like to become the 51st state. They are rabidly pro-American. And when George Bush went there, they held up signs saying, please occupy us. When George Bush was president, there were a number of little kids there named George. And in fact, when it's not political in the sense it's not partisan, because when Bill Clinton was president, there were lots of little children named Bill or Hillary. So, I mean, they are just tremendous.